नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नारं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नाष्टाप्रयेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भागवते उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिके ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today we study from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1st, Chapter 10th, Text Number 8. Amantriya cha abhyanugyata parishvajya abhivadya tam aruroha Ratam kaischit parishvakta abhivadita amantya chabhyanugyata parishvajya abhivadyatam Aruroharatam kaischit Parishvakto vibhadita Amantya chabhyanugyata Parishvajya vibhadyatam Aruroharatam kaischit Parishvakto vivadita Amantriya chabhyanugyata Parishvajya vivadyatam Aruroharatam kaischit Parishvakto vivadita Amantya chabhyanugyata Parishvajya vivadyatam Aruroharatam kaischit Parishvakto vivadita Amantriya taking permission cha and abhyanugyata being permitted parishvajya embracing abhivadya bowing down at the feet tam unto Maharaj Yudhisthir aruroha ascended ratam the chariot kaischit by someone parishvakta being embraced abhivadita being offered obeisances translation afterwards when the Lord asked permission to depart and the king gave it the Lord offered his respects to Maharaj Yudhisthira by bowing down at his feet and the king embraced him after this the Lord being embraced by others and receiving the obeisances got into his chariot. And please repeat. Afterwards, when the Lord asked permission, to depart, and the king gave it, the Lord offered his respects to Maharaj Yudhishthira by bowing down at his feet. And the king embraced him. After this, the Lord, being embraced by others and receiving their obeisances, got into his chariot. The following purport was written by His Divine Grace, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Maharaj Yudhishthira was the elder cousin of Lord Krishna, and therefore, while departing from him, the Lord bowed down at the king's feet. The king embraced him as a younger brother, although the king knew perfectly well that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord takes pleasure when some of his devotees accept him as less important in terms of love. No one is greater than or equal to the Lord, but he takes pleasure in being treated as younger than his devotees. These are all transcendental pastimes of the Lord. The impersonalists cannot enter into the supernatural roles played by the devotee of the Lord. Therefore, Bhima and Arjuna embraced the Lord because they were of the same age. But Nakula and Sahadeva bowed down before the Lord because they were younger than he. Amantya chabyanu gyata parisvajya bi vadyatam aruroha ratam kaischit parishvakto bivadita. Afterwards, when the Lord asked permission to depart, and the king gave it, the Lord offered the respects to Maharaj Yudhishthira by bowing down at his feet, and the king embraced him. After this, the Lord, being embraced by others and receiving their obeisances, got into his chariot. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miritanya Natasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitanya Navutale Vayam Rupa Kadamayam Dati Svapadantikam Nandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vashmavancha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sadhivam Sadvetam Sivadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Cha E Krishna Karuna Sinno Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kantarada Kantanamostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhana Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadada Sri Vasa Di Gaurabhakta Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The Lord Sri Krishna bowed down to Maharaj Yudhishthira. Bhima and Arjuna embraced him. And Nakula and Sahadeva offered obeisances to the Lord. So the reason was explained by Srila Prabhupada in his purport that there are transcendental relationships and there are social intercourses or way of dealing one with the other. So in the spiritual world is something and the material world is something else. Krishna did not go to Maharaj Yudhishthira saying, I'm not going to bow down to you because I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it doesn't matter if I appeared in this world 2 years after you, But you are you are certainly a jiva, and I am the supreme. He didn't say these things. He actually paid obeisances to Yudhisthira because he was elder. The reason of this are double. There are two reasons. The first reason, because he just likes it. He just likes it. Receiving respects is not as pleasant as giving respect. It's just a general rule of the spiritual psychology, or the pure psychology. Only people who are really, you could say that, really perverted on a material plane, feels pleasure when receiving respect. The reason is that the jiva by nature is dasa. Dasa means it finds pleasure in giving respects and not receiving it. There is only one Purusha, which is Krishna, which is the only one who feels by nature pleasure in receiving respect, because this is his nature, is a Purusha. And but everyone else is different, and they feel this pleasure of giving respect. When the person is in a material consciousness, and he, in the depth of his heart, he just envious of the Supreme Lord, and he's envious of his nature, thinking wrongly that there is more pleasure receiving respect instead of giving it, so they do everything to put themselves in that position, so that everyone will go to them and pray and say nice things. You are so great, you are so rich, you are so beautiful, and all these kinds of things. This is material consciousness. Spiritual consciousness is different. But when we are on the material plane, we also, and we come to the second point, why Krishna behaved in this way, is that you cannot have a society without etiquettes. It just becomes degrading, a place where people, and we spoke about this quite some time, we arrived to a verse that deals with this topic. Having a society without observing etiquettes, it just becomes very, very degraded. Everyone will talk to everyone in the same way, disrespecting and not paying properly. Just the whole atmosphere becomes without pleasure. It becomes really tamasic, means very ignorant, or at the most very passionate. You know, I got to do things in opera, work for a time. For paying obeisances or for respecting and bringing you some water or this kind of thing. It's very simple things. So the Lord, since he wants to teach to human society how to behave, then he didn't think about his position as the Supreme Personality of God, and he said, no, I am Krishna, I took birth in a certain year, and Maharaj Yudhisthira appeared before me, and also he is the king, so I have to pay obeisances. So Sri Krishna, the creator of all the universes, spiritual and material, paid obeisances to one of his devotees. And Maharaj Yudhisthira accepted the obeisances, because he understood that Sri Krishna now is teaching. He said, finding pleasure in paying obeisances, but he was teaching to human society how to behave. So elders should be respected, the kings should be respected, and etc., etc. So this is very important, and the devotees should all be very keen on knowing of the etiquettes, so that our society will be Sattvic society, and the whole atmosphere will become pleasant. Today, for instance, is coming a great devotee and sannyasis, and the guru, and the GBC. So in these next 3 days, we have a full opportunity to exert our knowledge of etiquettes. Don't be cheated in his humble and simple nature, that he behaves like a friend to everyone, etc. That's his pleasure of being humble and simple, but he's a great soul, so we had to not be friendly. We had to pay obeisances and being always in serving mood. And this is important for our spiritual life. So whoever is a disciple should behave in such a way, and whoever is a disciple of one of his dual brothers should behave in slightly different. In tattva he should respect him just like a spiritual master. In rasa it's a little bit different, because it may be not his personal spiritual master, still he is a spiritual master. It's a little different. He's a direct disciple and a disciple of a disciple. So I'm a brother, so I should behave, still respectfully, but it will be a little different. So all these things we had to learn. We had to make questions and understand how to behave. This is very, 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 very important. So I wanted to tell a story today, but I want to cut it in the middle, so that if you have any specific questions on etiquettes, we can answer, and then I can tell the story that I really love to say, because I will think of these stories in the last, this specific story in the last 2 or 3 days, and it just popped out in my mind, the story that I heard many, many years ago. I wanted to tell it, but first let's see if you have any question on etiquettes.
It says in towards the end of the
verse, may you yell so that
towards the end of the verse, and also at the end of the purport, well, throughout the whole purport, there's this element of embrace. You know, sometimes you hear different opinions. You know, sometimes devotees say, well, we shouldn't, it's not part of the etiquette. Sometimes devotees say it is part of the etiquette. So could you just speak a little bit about embrace? And you know, what's the dynamic of it?
Yes, embracing is a type of bona fide exchange of love between devotees. Of course, we should not embrace physically; just be very, how you say, sober, like embracing. It should not be like lovers. It should be a light type of embrace like this. And, this embrace also has to be understood when to do it, with who to do it. For instance, there is a temple, which I will not mention which one is, that I can see men and women embracing. Devotee and devotees. Between men and women, between devotee, male devotee and women devotee.
Oh, yeah.
So the first time that I saw it, I was shocked. And so this devotee, this lady devotee, they would try to do with me also. And I was completely taken back. And they started to criticize me, because I was not a loving personality. And there's one particular lady, which I will not say the name, not even under torture. I was in a Mongol Arctic in Houston, and there was full of devotees, because You know, two or three sannyasis were there. You can imagine I was there. And there is this lady devotee who didn't see me for a couple of years. So she was very happy to see me, and of course I was also very happy to see her. And she embraced me in Mongol art in front of everybody. I was like totally embarrassed by this situation. Men and women should never, ever, ever embrace each other. Unless that's your wife, of course. So,
or mother.
So it's a younger devotee should not go, for instance, to embrace the older devotee, because it's a sign of friendship, and the younger devotee should not feel a friend. It should be like a pupil, should be a student, so it should be always like this. And if the elder devotee comes and embraces you and shows you appreciation, then you may return very shyly to embrace, just hinting and embrace. But the younger devotee should not do that. Older devotee, yes, because he wants to show affection. And this kind of affection, it may be important for the younger devotee to feel that, you know, in our culture it's not just a cold type of relationship, I am a teacher and you are younger, so stay away, you know, this kind of mood we should not have. We should have a kind of a balance between showing human affection and at the same time keeping the relationship, so that, because relationships are instruments to learn, you know. It's just like Krishna and Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna was a friend, he's the same age, they're born in the same, you know, just a few days different one from the other. Exactly the same age. So they grew up as, well, not that they grew up, because when they met, the first time that they met was in the Draupadi Svayamvara, so they were just already grown up. But from the day that they met in the Svayamvara, they became very close friends, and they were talking like friends, you see. So when it came to the point that Arjuna was confused and didn't know what to do, because he knew, he understood that he had to fight this war. At the same time, it was so horrible to think that I had to kill my parents, my friends, I had to kill so many nice persons also, because in both, it's not that the two armies were not divided with all demons and all good people. They were mixed. You had bad people in the Pandavas party too. So, and also, by accepting to fight, Arjuna was putting in danger his own ally. So, for his fighting, he would have caused the death of everybody, friends and enemies. So he said, this war is just horrible, I don't want to fight. And then we can understand. We, as non-violent Gaudiya Vaishnava, that we don't see, is not in our culture. War is not in our culture. It may be in the culture of devotees in other ages, or when you have kingdoms, or when you have when you are a king, then you have to defend your subjects. But we have temples, you know. So it's very rare that we receive that we are in a situation when you have to exert physical violence. It's very, very, you know, in ISKCON it happened very, very few times. So, but in his situation, Arjuna had to do it. He understood that. So, for one chapter, up to the seventh, or maybe a little more than seven, anyway, up to the seventh verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna didn't know what to do. He didn't see any way out in this situation. And the reason was that he didn't see Krishna as someone to accept his words. He didn't see that Krishna had to follow his instruction. The reason is that they were friends. When you're a friend, you say, he says, no, both, and it's equal, because you're a friend. But Arjuna was exceedingly intelligent person. He understood who Krishna was, and there was a certain moment when Arjuna said, "Okay, now I don't need your friendship. Now I need your teachings." So he stopped seeing Krishna as a friend, and he said, "Now I am your disciple. Now you instruct me." At that point, the flow of information became useful for solving Arjuna's puzzle, Arjuna's doubts, not as a friend. Until you don't accept someone as a guide, there is not much use in the relationship. And this is why etiquettes are so important, because when you come to the point of accepting a senior devotee or senior devotees as teachers, then this relationship will not help you in understanding, because you don't listen. That's why in our movement we have all these positions. We have sannyasis, we have brahmanas, we have temple presidents, we have GBC, we have gurus, we have so many situations. Why? Because of helping people to understand that you have to respect this person. If he doesn't respect, he doesn't listen. If he doesn't listen, then he will not advance in spiritual life. So friendship is good, but it has to come to a point where the friendship has to stop, and we have to preach to people in a certain, seriously, very seriously, very composed, very sober, in such a way they will listen. Always a joking person is not taken seriously, and then he can really preach, in my humble opinion. So, as far as embracing, when a senior devotee comes, you should not go to embrace him, you should offer obeisances. If he embraces you, then you return embrace, of course. But that is the etiquette. Any other thing about... about etiquette?
It's not about etiquette. The clarity, I just saw... maybe it was... I don't know who posted, maybe you posted. There was this video clip of a devotee couple in Italy on TV. Mm. Have you seen that?
Oh, just the beginning. I didn't see it all. Yeah.
You know that?
No.
It seems like it was a kind of favorable...
It was a favorable program, yeah.
I couldn't understand because it's very
No, I will see it. I posted it because I saw 1 minute or two, and then I had things. But today I will watch it all. It was very favorable, yes. There was a very important program in Italy. So that, I don't know these devotees because they look very young devotees. And I have not been in Italy since 99, something.
They were somewhere else.
I've not been in Italy since a long, long time, so I know only the senior most devotees, the youngest. I don't know them. They don't know them. They may know me by name, but not by person.
And this is a recent show.
It should be a very recent show, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Normally, when you go to this television show, we are regularly going. It's nothing extraordinary. It's just a very basic philosophy of who we are, what we do, and we are devotees and spiritual, and we don't eat meat. This kind of, why do you put this sign? Why do you shave up? Why you don't have sex? This is kind of topics they ask. I was thinking the other day. Since we mentioned her some time ago, that we were talking about lady devotees, and so I mentioned this Gangamata Goswamini in some previous class. So I wanted, and at that time I promised you to tell you something, since I have a good memory for promises. I like to keep them. I would like to say something about, do you know this, her story? Have you ever heard the story of Gangamma? You should have, yes. What about you? No, you haven't. There is something particular in our culture that we have a huge number of wonderful personalities. Our literature is very rich in this. Thousands of tens of hundreds of thousands of personalities. Some of them are described in the Puranas, and some of them are described in, since they appeared many years after the Vedic time. Then there is the Smriti literature, or the literature that are coming after, the more modern type of literature. Gangamata Goswamini is in the Gaudiya Vaishnava literature. Gaudiya, when we say Gaudiya Vaishnava, means Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So beginning from the 16th century to our days, so this is the 500 years of history, and only this history we can fill up hundreds, thousands of books telling stories of great personality. This story of Gangamata Goswami is particularly beautiful because she was a queen. She was a very important queen. And her father, whose name was Naresh Narayan, I don't remember correctly, and I don't remember the name of the mother, was the he was the king of a kingdom called Puntia. Puntia was in the eastern Bengal, and nowadays is in Bangladesh. After the Second World War, the Bengal divided in two. You know, so it became the Bangladesh and Bengal. You know, what is Bengal? So a big part of our history now is related to Bangladesh. So there was this kingdom, and they had they didn't have any son. They had this daughter. And they named this daughter Sachi. And Sachi was beautiful and very intelligent, and she studied. She had a very bright intelligence. She was so beautiful that so many boys, they were after her, and also she was the daughter of the king. So it was a good, you know, a good solution for problems. So they wanted to marry her, but she said, I am already married to Krishna. And so she refused to get married, and they insisted that you are now in the age of marriage, so you should marry. So she refused and refused, and when time came, and Naresh Narayan and his wife gave up the body, she became the queen. And it was a big kingdom, it was a rich kingdom. But she was not really interested in managing a kingdom, and she was always keeping company with sadhus and brahmanas, hearing the Vedas and this kind of thing. She was a very learned lady. So with the excuse of having to go around and checking out a kingdom, etc., she would often go away and putting in charge parents or trusted brahmanas or the administration of the kingdom. So one day he arrived in Jagannath Puri. Jagannath Puri was not part of our kingdom. So that is just a very important city, a religious city. And so she was trying to figure out what to do with her life. So she arrived in Jagannath Puri. She went to see Lord Jagannath in the temple. And there in Jagannath Puri, she decided to go to Vrindavan. At that time, the king of Puri was Mukunda Deva, that was his name. If you go to Puri, you find a list of the kings for thousands of years. There is just a list of the names, so many names. The name of this particular king is Mukunda Deva. I mention it because in a few minutes we will see that Mukunda Deva became an important personality in this story. So she went to Vrindavan to look for a guru. Without a guru, there is no spiritual life. You see, it is as simple as that. So she went to Vrindavan to look for someone, for a guru. And there was a very famous bhakta there, whose name was Haridas Pandit. And he was in the line of Gadadhar Pandit, because his guru was Anantacharya. Anantacharya was a direct disciple of Gadadhar Pandit. So he was connected in this way, Haridas Pandit. So we are talking about the 17th century. That's when Gangamata Goswami lived. So she went to Haridas Pandit and asked for initiation, and Haridas Pandit want to test her. It's not like today we have people give initiation in the street. You want to initiation like this without knowing. At the time, the gurus would initiate only those who were qualified. So he tested her in so many ways, and at the beginning, he said, "You are the daughter of a king. A daughter of a king cannot do the life of a sadhu. Go back home and stay home." That's your... So at that point, Gangamata Sachi, at the time when it was his name, her name, Sachi, could think, "Where Gurudeva is telling me to go back home, I should go back home." But she was more intelligent than that. He understood the real meaning of what the guru was saying. He was saying, "I want to see if your desire is intense, if your desire is real. I'm testing you." She understood that he was testing. And she remained in Vrindavan, and she just performed bhajan, chanting all day long, and keeping at a distance association with sadhu and sadhvis. Sadhvis is the female name for the sadhu. There is a sadhu, there is a sadhvi. Keeping association. And she was so austere. She lived under a tree and everywhere. And you have to understand, she was the daughter of a king. She was used to live lavishly, to live in such opulence with everything. And she was also quite lean. She was thin. She was a delicate type of lady. For her, outwardly, it seems like that she was living a very difficult life. But she was very happy to do that. And at a certain point, seeing those austerities, she was eating a quarter of a chapati every day, that's all. She would go and ask alms, and they would give her something. She grew very little, and also a little sick. She became also a little sick. Haridas Pandit became admired by the austerities of Sachi, and she said, "Okay, now you are qualified," and he gave her initiation, she became his disciple. Just like in the history we have told the last time I gave class here, the story of Raghunandas Goswami, that he was entrusted to Swarupa Damodar Goswami by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the same way, Aidos Pandit told Sachi to go under the care of another one of his disciples, whose name was Lakshmipriya. Lakshmipriya was a very important bhakti and sadhvi in Vrindavan. So she took care, and they became friends. They were living together in Vrindavan. Especially, they went to live in Radhakunda. For many years, they stayed in Radhakunda, and they lived in the house of Raghunandas Goswami. And every day they would do parikrama of Govardhan. So it's... they leave. At a certain point, Haridas Pandit said to Ganga Mata, to Sachi, that you should go back to Puri for preaching. Please go there and preach Krishna consciousness there. So taking the order, and this time it was not a test, this time it was a real instruction by the Guru. So she went to Jagannath Puri. In Jagannath Puri, she went to live in the old house of Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya. At that time, the house was in very run-down condition. Nobody has lived in this house for many, many years. It was a kind of completely... No. She lived there and she started to preach, to give lectures, Srimad Bhagavatam, and she started to become famous, become very famous. One day, this is an important occurrence in Sachidevi's life, that one day the Maha Varuni Snan was approaching, and in that day, there is a devotee should go and take bath in the Ganga, but the Ganga is not in Puri. But Haridas Pandit gave the instruction to Sachi that she should not leave Jagannath Puri at any condition. She should stay there. So she wanted to go and take bath in the Ganges, but she could not go, so she was quite in the why sad in not having there is in Puri you can see even today a small pond which is called Shveta Ganga, and this place is the incarnation, is a liquid incarnation in Puri of the Ganga in Puri. If you go in India, you should go to visit Shveta Ganga. There is right there a ghat which is after the name of Ganga Mata Goswami, still there. You can go to take bath in the same place where Ganga Mata Goswami was taking a bath every day. So, at night, the Lord Jagannath came in her dream, and she said, you go to Shveta Ganga pond, the Kund, take bath there. It will be just the same. Don't worry, this is Ganga. She went there at night, because in the night of Mahavaruni Snan, she should it is celebrated at night. She went there, and for some reason, Shveta Ganga overflowed. It's not specified why it happened. Maybe a storm or something. And the water became so big that they started to carry everyone around, and Ganga Mata and Sachi also, up to the Jagannath temple. So through the waves, she went to the Jagannath temple. And there was a big commotion and people screaming and things. So the guards, they went inside this temple, the Jagannath temple, to see if everything was okay in the temple. And they found inside the temple a knight closed the door, all the gates are closed. It's not easy to enter in. They found Ganga Mata there and they thought that she was a thief. So she was thrown in jail at a trial. And the same night, Lord Jagannath came in dream in Mukunda Dela to the king. And he was very, very angry. He was very angry. What are you doing with my pure devotee? Immediately, Sachi should go, should come out of your prison. Immediately go there. Ask permission. Nay, you should take initiation from her. She is a great, great devotee. So Mukunda Deva personally went to the jail, opened the door, finding Sachi completely calm and tranquil, and just chanted the name of Krishna. From that day, she was called Ganga Mata because the Ganges carried her. And Lord Jagannath said this whole pastime was enacted because I wanted to wash the Ganga Mata Goswamini's lotus feet in the temple in front of me. That's why I carried Ganga Mata in the temple. She became a very famous preacher and she made thousands of disciples in Jagannath Puri and the zone. And this was one of the great, great devotees we should always remember, especially for her attachment to chanting, worshipping the deities, and for austerity. So this is briefly a story I wanted to relate to you, so you may know a little better another personality. Every time I like to tell you some story or somebody so that you can meditate on their stories.
This was in the 17th century?
Yes, Gadadhar Pandit had disappeared at the end of 1580, around 1580. Anantacharya disappeared sometime after, then Haridas Pandit, so it must be. There is no, I haven't found the exact dates. We have dates, for instance, the Goswamis, we know when they. When they appeared, we know that Sanatana Goswami appeared, for instance, Sanatana Goswami appeared in 1488, and Rupa Goswami was 2 years younger, so he was about 60. And we know Raghuna Goswami in 1494. We know many, but not everyone. So we don't know exactly, or I don't know, probably somebody may know that from reading somewhere, some literature. But it must be in the 17th chapter, 17th century.
It must be really amazing living in the same house.
Yes.
Maybe still there, or still.
I think that something is there. You know, they've been. It has been rebuilt. I never been there, because I've been in Puri for a few weeks only, and in a difficult situation. So I don't know much. But if you go to Puri, one thing that you should do when you go to India, and you should go with somebody who is an expert in the Tirtha Yatras, you know, that we have devotees. So they show you around the places and they tell you the stories. Otherwise, what's the point of going in a holy place if you don't listen to stories? So there are devotees who live there, so they know a lot. You should go and or go in with somebody who knows about this particular aspect of our culture, which is going in the holy places. I went to Puri alone, you know, Ishvari and I stayed a few weeks, we didn't have anybody. And one thing is that we stayed for some weeks in the Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house, where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta took birth. And there is still the original part. What they did is that the house crumbled down completely. Okay, but not completely. So there is kind of one wing of the... Is it correct to say one wing of the house? Which...
Wing?
Part of the house.
Yeah.
A wing. So behind there is nothing. So they rebuilt a new house. But there is still in the front, if you go in the front, half of the house is still intact. And you can go in the room where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta took birth. So we stayed there for some time. And the devotees, this is a Gaudiya Math. The Gaudiya Math of what's the name of the Prabhupada? God brother. I'm sorry, my memory is going. See, it's from my brain. Does not get enough oxygen and I forget it. In that place, everybody took birth. They were looking because it's two story high. So we don't know, maybe by the time it was a little high, I don't know. Anyway, you could see the place where Srila Bhaktivinoda with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta young. They would see the Ratha Yatra with Lord Jagannath coming. There is a story describing how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur would go in the window to look to the chariot of Lord Jagannath passing with his son. So there is a lot of places still, maybe a little run down, maybe not in the perfect condition, but still you can see. Like in Govardhan, there are a lot of very important places that you know that a lot of, and there is nothing, you know, they don't keep it, they don't like there is this what's the name? Dana Nivartana Kunda. And it's a very important, and you go there and there is nothing. There is a little thing and a lot of rubbish. They throw rubbish there and there is not even water. When it rains, it comes a little water in the kunda. And then it's the Dana Nivartana Kunda. It's the place where Lord Krishna and Radharani still do a lot of pastimes. You know, it's an important place. Excuse me all this noise, but so maybe one thing that we could do as devotees, you know, if some of us who do not want to preach, if we stay in the West, we should preach. We have nothing else to do. If we don't want to preach, then we should go to India. Maybe we can take care of one of these places, these holy places. Build up a little hut, maybe, or something, you know. Keep clean. Clean up the holy places. That is something that personally I would always like to do. Any other questions?
Yes, I want to get your perspective or your opinion, I guess, of why you think these holy places are not maintained.
They're not maintained properly because there may be an external reason, the internal reasons we may not know. Because sometimes it is the Lord's will that holy places disappears. For instance, after Lord Krishna experienced Radhakunda and Shyamakunda disappeared for some time. In his coverage, there was no Radhakunda and Shyamakunda. And his great-grandson, his name was Bhajanaba, he unhealthed again. He brought them up again. And he took care of them. Actually, Bhajanaba was in charge of Mathura, the son of Jamanda. He stayed there and he installed many deities and he did a lot of work. After Bhajanaba disappeared, after some time, Radhakunda and Shyamakunda again disappeared. And the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was looking for Radhakunda and Shyamakunda. And when he came for the first time in Vraja, he was asking around. He was displaying pastime of not knowing where Radhakunda and Shyamakunda were. And there were two little ponds, just, you know, maybe big like this. One was called Gauriket and the other one was called Kaliket. Two small ponds. So he understood that that was Radhakunda and Shyamakunda. Nobody knew. It was just in a paddy field. So he asked to his disciples, to the six Goswamis, and in particular Raghunath Das Goswami was the one who excavated the two kundas and he created and he gave to kunda the shape that we know today. He didn't want to do it actually because he said, well, you know, I'm a renunciant, I don't want to do this kind of works. You know, it's a big work, involves money and people. You know, Raghunath Das Goswami wanted to chant. But then he became convinced that he had to do, but he had no money. So there was this very rich man who became exceedingly rich. And he went to Badari Kashram after the Himalayas because he wanted to give the Lord personally one donation, big donation, a lot of money. So Badi Narayana came to his dream and he said, no, you should go back to Vraja and give the money to a sadhu called Raghunath Das Goswami. He wants to excavate. So he went back. He gave the money to Raghunath Das and he accepted the money, and with that money he built up what we the way we know Radhakunda and Shyamakunda the way we know it today. And there is a big story about the excavation of Radhakunda and Shyamakunda. It was one very short story. One day when the Radhakunda Shyamakunda was not excavated yet, and he and Raghunath Das Goswami was sitting in the middle of these two small ponds, he was just chanting, and then the Emperor Akbar came. He was passing through Vraja for some military action. He had this whole army and horses and elephants, and he had thousands of soldiers, and they needed to drink. So they arrived there and they were asking around where they could find a river or a lake or something to give water to all this. And Raghunath Das Goswami was there. He said, well, there is water just here. And there is two small ponds like this, small. And the emperor said, Raghunath Das, well, this is not enough even for one even for one person. What to speak about elephants and horses, etc. And Raghunath Das said, don't worry, just drink. So they started to drink. And the whole army could drink. And the water seems like it never finished. They were never empty. And when they went away, Radhakunda and Shyamakunda, who at the time had a different name, were still intact with all this small time. extremely miraculous. The whole story about Radha Kunda Shyama Kunda is a beautiful story. Okay. Akbar was very, very favorable to Vaishnavism. We have a history of barbarous invasion. Akbar was not a Hindu temple, was one of the invaders, Mughal invaders of India at that time. And we have a history of barbaric Mughals and Muslims coming to India, destroying, and we have, you can only imagine, that on top of Vrindavan temples, there were fires burning all day long, were kept ablazing with the books of our acharyas. So we have a vast literature. Can you imagine if all this work were not destroyed by these barbarians, how much literature more we would have? And they destroyed temples. Akbar was one of the few, if not the only Mughal emperor who was pious. He appreciated Hindu culture, and he had so this is a very good way of ruling. When you go in a place, you don't just change everything, but you use people knowing the local culture, you know, to rule. So he had the whole group of brahmanas giving him advices how to rule without dissatisfying people, not to have revolutions and things like that. So he was ruling India in a very Indian way. So this is intelligent, and we can see the same wisdom in Srila Prabhupada coming in the West and doing things in such a way that the Westerners could take Krishna consciousness. Any other question? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.